Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, JugglingDynamite.com and VenablePark.com. Welcome back to the show and happy Easter.
Yes, you too, Jim.
Danielle, higher costs are weighing on Canadian households, and I'm seeing inflation reports around the planet. We're not unique at all. Egypt, 12% inflation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and the inflation has really been driven by food and the cost of fuel, which really hits the worst. Plus, in addition, the housing component is 30% or about a third of the CPI as well. So we've got those three key elements, shelter, food and energy, being the most inflated that we've seen in many decades. And so those really add up to a lot of problems for households, especially because we have negative real wage growth. For the last 6 months, we've had negative real wage growth, which actually only ever happens during recessions, Jim. So it is quite possible that we are either already in or about to be in a full-blown recession, and we're going into it with people quite unprepared for it. We have low unemployment at the moment, but we have this big escalation in, that's very typical of late cycle to be low unemployment. And you have, you know, the prospects of once you have really low unemployment, that unemployment is going to rise from here. If we get into a recession, for sure, layoffs will pick up. So we've got households that are already stressed. About half of them in Canada are saying that they're deferring the purchase of any further big ticket items. Consumer sentiment in the U.S. is at recessionary levels. In Canada, Canadians are a little slow on the uptake here, where, you know, the Nanos polls are definitely tracking a quickly declining consumer confidence, but it's still more elevated than Americans. But I think that's because Canadians still have this concept that their houses made them some money, and they are thinking that's a permanent plateau, I suppose. The problem is that it isn't, and we are very likely to see a decline in housing prices, which I know is blasphemous to most people, but it does happen and routinely has happened in other cycles in parts of the world, where you've seen such dramatic appreciation, even lesser appreciation than we've had in Canada. So we've really set ourselves up here with going into it with very high debt levels, a lot of leverage off the household sector into their shelter, as I've said. And, you know, we've got a lot of talk. We've touched on this before, people saying, well, it's because Canada's special, Canada's nice, you know, they aren't making more properties and all that sort of thing. None of that's really true. Yes, Canada's nice, yes, but that's not the justification for having a doubling in home prices over the past 4 years. Like, for example, in the U.S., they have roughly the same amount of supply per capita, and our home prices are at least 50% higher than there. And what's really interesting is that the Dallas Fed has this model that tracks, this is part of the central bank system in the United States, they have a model that tracks what they consider housing bubble conditions. And their own metrics are now warning of a U.S. housing bubble. And, of course, their house prices to income and prices to rent and all that are much more subdued than we have in Canada. So we've got a lot of downside risk here. For households and businesses, and interest rates, of course, have already come up significantly on this expectation that the central banks are going to continue to hike pretty aggressively.
Now, you mentioned in your blog as well that multiple property owners hold up to 41% of housing in some provinces, the federal government making noises about banning foreign ownership, but these are domestic property holders. These aren't foreign. Ross Kay, friend of the show, said foreigners haven't been a big factor in Canadian real estate since 2017.
Yeah, so one in six Canadian homeowners nationally have multiple properties. It's much higher in some of the most expensive areas. And the problem is that this is the same cohort that has benefited from rising asset prices the past few years, which, you know, they then have levered off of or borrowed against some of their, you know, their main property to buy a secondary property or to buy a vacation property, a rental property, on the idea that, you know, housing or prices are going up. It's a great investment. I don't know how many times I've heard people say, well, you can never lose money on real estate, which is just blatantly false. And if you are basing that on this, you know, a completely false assumption, you're likely to make erroneous allocation decisions. Like, you're likely to buy things at high prices and expect that that's going to be somehow an investment. So yes, it's a problem because, you know, everyone talks about the shortage of affordable housing. Unfortunately, we can't correct the problem with the housing market unless prices come down. And that's exactly what's likely to happen to correct, because there's no way to do it by giving people more access to credit. Banks aren't lending. We're already seeing a contraction in the amount of loans being made, both to businesses and households. People aren't qualifying for refis now in the same way that they were, because the rates have gone up, the interest rates have gone up. It was interesting to see that the U.S. banks have been reporting this week, and Wells Fargo and J.P. Morgan, they in the U.S. again, but they have noted a big drop, like 27% and 37% declines in their year-over-year mortgage originations, again, because their mortgage rates are now, the popular 30-year mortgage rate in the United States has gone above 5%. And, you know, that's a huge leap in a short period of time. It was just 2.65 in January of 21. And a similar thing has happened, of course, in Canada with our floating rate mortgages, which went up this week, of course, with the Bank of Canada raising, by now setting the base rate at 1%. And, that is expected to be, the base rate is expected to go to 2.5 by year end. So every time that the Bank of Canada hikes by 0.5%, you see that's $500 of more interest per year on every $100,000 of floating rate debt outstanding. It really does add up. And so anyway, I think back to your point about why is it an issue that there's, you know, a lot of people with multiple properties. The issue is that there's a bunch of things there. One is that investors who are holding properties on the expectation they only go up will sell said properties if it turns out that they're losing value or they start to decline. So they are not necessarily the stickiest owners. That's particularly true of the investor class, which are not actually, in other words, corporations, you know, big corporations and investment firms that have been buying up lots of single-use properties. That's not even included in that number that you mentioned, the one in six Canadian homeowners, and 41% of homeowners in some of the hotter areas like Ontario and BC. So those are people are not even included, but they're not necessarily sticky or long-term owners, not like a family that is literally in a neighborhood, you know, raising their kids, so to speak, and they're there for the long term. These are kind of the hot flows where as soon as they start to have liquidity problems in any other of their asset holdings, so if, for example, they start to lose money in anything in the stock or bond market, where they start to see a downturn in revenues in some of their other businesses, they will look to raise cash, and that's where you see them then wanting to sell some of these properties. So that's a negative when you've got a big ownership in the investor class. They also tend to do it with a lot of leverage and borrowing, so that also makes them vulnerable to any weakness and then also be motivated to sell. The other thing is, if you go back to the individuals that have owned multiple properties, a lot of these are boomers who are expecting to use some of those funds as their retirement. And we're starting to see already with the cost of living hikes that people that thought they could retire when asset prices are very high and decided to retire in the last couple of years, the numbers are starting to show they're going back into the workforce looking for returning to employment because they're finding the cost of living so high. So that trend is likely to continue and then actually get much worse if we continue to see losses in things like their retirement portfolios, right? A lot of people, we've had a really rough quarter, not only stocks, but bonds both have declined in the past few months, and that's really starting to hit people. I think we got a lot more of that to come. And if we start to see weakness in the price of housing as well as in their retirement portfolios, of course, there's a great impulse then to try and sell things, to try and raise cash. And that's where you get into the cash crunch that we saw in like a 2008 style cash crunch. And I think we've really set ourselves up for that kind of magnitude now again.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. Danielle, in a time of high inflation and a possible recession around the corner, what can you do to protect yourself?
Well, the environment that I'm speaking of, I think we're already in the bear market in terms of the equity markets. And I think that the bond market sell-off to date is now quite overdone because the prospects of the Bank of Canada getting off another six hikes in the next year, over like before the end of the year here, is quite low. I think they want to do that. I understand why they want to do that. They want to get inflation under control. It's very unpopular, but they also want to open up some room between, zero and where they are in their policy rate, so that they can cut again to try and stimulate. This is the old playbook, right? As soon as the economy or the stock market weakens, they've looked to cut rates, and they're still only at 1% after this week's doubling of their policy rate. So they're really looking for anything they can do to get some ability to increase liquidity in the system again down the road. So I think right now they're thinking and talking really bold, but the bond market has already sold off and priced in something like 13 rate hikes over the course of the next several months. I think that's crazy. That's not going to happen. And so that means that there's an opportunity to put some funds into things like government bonds in Canada. People can do things like GICs have come up considerably in terms of their amount of interest you can get on those. So that's not a bad idea to do on a 1 or 2 year basis, just to put some capital in safety. Of course, they're not liquid, so you have to make sure it's money you're not going to want back in the next, in the interim. The U.S. dollar is really breaking out here. The U.S. dollar index is above 100 again. We last saw that in 2020, Jim, in the throes of the early pandemic. And that's because the euro is weakened sharply and capital, again, when you get into this kind of, we've got a lot of China shut down. We've got the world economy turning down pretty rapidly. And you have a lot of need for U.S. dollars to pay a lot of debt that's been borrowed in U.S. dollars. So this is, again, the makings of the kind of cash crunch that we've seen in past downturns. And so there's a push for that. That means that there's money coming out of commodities. Right now, the investment manager world is extremely long on the commodity trade because everyone's, been really part and parcel of this inflation mania, thinking that there's only going to be escalating inflation. Remember that it is normal for humans to see the most recent trend and assume it will continue in perpetuity. So that's exactly what they've done with the inflation call. That's exactly why they've all piled into commodities. But in fact, commodities are coming off the boil here, Jim. We've got things like lumber's down about 50%, iron ore about 13%, real steel rebar. Oil, of course, has come off about 20% from its peak a while in March. The Baltic Dry Index, which is a shipping index, a global shipping index, it's off about 60%, more than 60%. So there's a lot of downside coming for a lot of these, quote, risk assets. And I think Canadians should be very careful because they have a complacency about the fact that the TSX has held up better than other indices so far. In fact, you know, things like the S&P 500 is off about 8% from its March 4th close. Interestingly, today, Jim, it's about 44.20, and it's actually below its 50-day moving average today. We'll see where it closes, but we've had a lot of this selling off into the end of the day. Again, this is very typical of bear market moves. You get these violent rallies, big spikes up, and then, you know, again, losing down to a lower low. So I think we should be expecting that that kind of pattern is likely to continue here. Again, people have to be careful when they look at the TSX because they think, oh, well, it's only off a couple of percent from its peak. But the reason it is because it's so chock-a-block full of fossil fuels and Canadian banks. So if we look at that, the issue is that they're late cycle performers. So they do well in the last final throes of the inflationary spike because of their exposure to the commodities. But ultimately, in this phase that I'm describing, in the disinflationary period where we get into falling, less inflation rolls over and growth rolls over, that's where you get a lot of losses on the commodity side and on the bank side. Banks are actually having a negative go right now because there's a flat and inverted curve in terms of the yield curve, which is how they make money in taking in deposits and borrowing. So that's classic late cycle stuff where the flat and inverted curve really restricts bank lending. At the same time, there's a big decline in loan demand, as I noted before, because rates have gone up. Commercial real estate holdings are coming under pressure here because a lot of leases that were locked in are now coming up for renewal, and there's question marks about who's going to be renewing some of the leases. At the same time, the capital market fees are falling. Investment banks do well when everybody's in the very, you know, investment great investment appetite and everyone's wanting in to buy assets, but as soon as people are looking to raise cash and they're more cautious, banks don't get the fees that they did. So in fact, we've seen that the Canadian banks are so far off just over 8%, but the U.S. banks are actually off considerably more than that already, and that suggests that we're likely to see more downside in the Canadian banks as well. So I caution people to not think that if they have a bunch of Canadian mutual funds or Canadian ETFs that they're, you know, somehow protected from this. In fact, they're very exposed to the down cycle, as we've seen in other times, you know, where the TSX rolled over in 2008 and in 2000 and then went on to fall by half. I think you could easily see that kind of an environment in this setup. And so people really want to, you know, look at their overall risk exposure here, make sure that they have a good amount of cash. And that means you have to sell some assets usually and move some of your savings into that really short-term safe category, whether it be short-term government bonds, cash, money deposits, this sort of thing, because that's about the only things that don't fall in value or lose value in this environment. And then what I'm describing is really setting up for a buying opportunity across so many asset classes at once. And I think that, you know, we shouldn't expect a short quick V like we saw in 2020 when the governments of the world threw trillions in fiscal stimulus and central banks were, you know, tossing trillions of liquidity at asset markets, because they do have a profoundly different setup today. They do have an inflationary problem right now that is, you know, really got their attention. They don't have, you know, typically in past cycles, Jim, whenever they are going into a hiking cycle, it takes about 3% of hiking to get the yield curve to invert, the 10 and 2 treasury yield, that spread, that inversion that signals the onset of recession. Usually they hike about 3% before that happens. This time they hiked about a 0.25, and that already happened. So they really don't have the runway here. They're coming into this a very weakened condition. And that means that we shouldn't expect there to be, you know, a quick, sharp rebound or bottom this time. I think that we could see a pretty extended down cycle, certainly, you know, over the next several months into the fall even. And as, if you don't protect yourself from the losses, you know, it's very hard to be one of the few strong hands with liquidity that's able to buy things. This really is a profoundly historic period in assets. I don't think we've ever seen, not that I've ever seen, and I've studied centuries of this stuff, I've never seen the degree of froth and bubble conditions in so many asset classes at once, potentially in the 20s. That's about the only time I could remember or I've found where you did have a real estate bubble in, you know, 19, early 20s into 25, and then it morphed into a stock market and credit bubble in the late 20s. Of course, then we had the, you know, the deflation and depression for a few decades. So, not to be overly, draconian here, but I do think that we're in for a long period of decline. And that's actually what we need to do, because we do have to, burst these bubbles, change behaviors, get people back to more productive pursuits and doing more intelligent things with capital. So that'll all ultimately be positive on the upside when we get through this.
Danielle, thank you so much for talking with us.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Counsel Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or any of our other guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.